In a world of broken promises and forgotten people, one soldier refused to surrender. From the dusty fields of Bondiqui to the fiery streets of Ouagadougou, Captain Ibrahim Traoré fought not for glory, but for the soul of a nation. Betrayed, hunted, unbreakable, this is the true story of the Rising Lion of the Sahel. A revolution you won't just hear, you'll feel. Chapter 1. Roots of the Warrior. The Sahel sun was unforgiving, even in the earliest hours of the morning. Its rays spilled across the cracked red earth of Bondiqui, a modest town tucked away in the western heartlands of Burkina Faso. Here, among the low mud brick homes and whispering fields of millet, a boy named Ibrahim Traoré was born. Not into privilege, but into the rich soil of a people who understood hardship, dignity, and survival. His father, a quiet man of principle, worked the land with hands hardened by years of sun and struggle. His mother, a woman of warmth and fierce intelligence, tended to the household, teaching her children not only how to live but how to dream. Though they owned little, their home overflowed with a wealth of values: humility, respect, courage, and an unwavering belief that a better future could be forged with one's own two hands. From a young age, Ibrahim absorbed these lessons like the parched ground drinks in the rare rains. His mother often told him stories by the hearth, tales of ancient African empires, of kings who rose from nothing to lead mighty peoples. Her voice, low and musical, painted pictures in the smoky twilight. "Strength, my son, is not in the fist alone. It is in the mind, the heart, and the will to stand when others fall." By the time he was 6, Ibrahim was already different. Other boys played in the dusty alleyways, chasing goats and wrestling for fun, but Ibrahim was often seen perched on a smooth rock outside their compound, squinting at the horizon. There was something searching in his gaze, a longing that seemed far too vast for such a small frame. School was a privilege in Bondiqui, and his parents, despite their limited means, insisted that Ibrahim and his siblings attend. The local schoolhouse was a battered structure with peeling walls and a single, tattered Burkinabe flag flapping stubbornly outside. Inside, the air was thick with chalk dust and hope. Ibrahim quickly distinguished himself, not the loudest nor the boldest, but the most relentless. When he didn't understand a concept, he stayed after class, pestering the weary teacher with questions until he grasped it fully. When bullies mocked the quieter children, Ibrahim, though slight in build, stood between them and danger, earning bruises but also admiration. It was at school that Ibrahim first learned about Thomas Sankara, the revolutionary captain who had once dared to dream of a sovereign, self-reliant Burkina Faso. The lessons stirred something deep within him, something that went beyond admiration. In Sankara's defiance, Ibrahim saw the contours of a life he wished to live. Not for riches, not for fame, but for the soul of his people. At home, his parents encouraged his curiosity. His father built a crude bookshelf from salvaged wood, where Ibrahim carefully arranged borrowed textbooks and aging history volumes. He read under the oil lamp until late into the night, his small fingers tracing maps of Africa, his mind racing with questions. Why are we still poor? Why do foreign powers dictate so much of our lives? Why can't we stand on our own? The answers were not simple, and no adult in Bondiqui could fully explain them. But the seeds were planted, seeds of doubt, of anger, and most of all, of a fierce, protective love for his homeland. When Ibrahim was around 9 years old, a terrible drought struck their region. The millet crops failed. Families went hungry. The government in the capital, far removed from the suffering of rural towns, offered little aid. Ibrahim witnessed neighbors burying children who had died of malnutrition, simple, senseless deaths that should have been prevented. It was here, in the cruelty of an indifferent system, that Ibrahim's childhood was burned away, leaving behind something harder, sharper. One evening, after helping his father bury the shriveled remains of their crops, Ibrahim sat alone outside. The air was dry as bone. Overhead, the stars blinked with ancient, indifferent light. And in the silence, he made a vow. "One day I will fight for us. I will not let this be all we are." He spoke it aloud, though no one was there to hear, save perhaps the spirits of the ancestors, who, it is said, listened to such promises in the night. By the time he reached adolescence, Ibrahim had acquired a reputation in Bondiqui, not for boasting, nor for mischief, but for a kind of stubborn righteousness. He helped elders carry water from distant wells. He protected younger children from older bullies, sometimes at great personal cost. And whenever a traveling merchant or village elder spoke of the world beyond their dusty borders, of conflict, injustice, hope, and change, Ibrahim listened with the stillness of a lion readying to pounce. His dreams of a better Burkina Faso were no longer vague ideas. They were starting to form into something tangible, a desire for service, for discipline, for strength tempered by compassion. In 2006, as he approached the end of secondary school, Ibrahim faced a choice. He could remain in Bondakwe like most of his peers, eking out a modest life on land that grew less forgiving each year. Or he could leave, seek education, training, and the means to turn his ideals into action. It was not an easy decision. His mother wept quietly the night he told them he would apply for the University of Ouagadougou, aiming to pursue geology, a science that could help unlock Burkina's buried wealth. But deep down, even she knew, Ibrahim's destiny was never going to be bound to the narrow furrows of their farm. He set out for the capital with a small cloth bag slung over one shoulder, a handful of coins tucked into his pocket, and a head full of dreams that burned hotter than the desert sun. In the city, life was harsh and indifferent. Ibrahim attended lectures during the day, took odd jobs by night, and slept in crowded, crumbling dormitories. He saw firsthand the rot that had seeped into every corner of national life: corruption, inequality, broken promises. The ideals of Sankara, once proudly taught in his village schoolhouse, seemed distant echoes here, replaced by cynicism and foreign exploitation. And yet Ibrahim did not falter. If anything, the city's cruelty only sharpened his resolve. It was during these grueling years that another idea began to take root in his mind. True change could not come from books alone. It had to be fought for, defended, earned. When news of growing insurgencies in the north broke, villages torched, children kidnapped, government forces outgunned, Ibrahim's path became clear. He would join the military, not to conquer, not to oppress, but to protect the people who could not protect themselves. To build a country that answered not to foreign masters, but to the children of its soil. He enlisted not long after graduation, signing his name with a steady hand. As he stood in line with other recruits, sweat trickling down his back, a single thought thundered through his mind like a drumbeat. This is only the beginning.